Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Wizards, Warriors and Words, a fantasy writing advice podcast. I'm Jed Hearn, author of Fires of the Dead, and I'm joined by my fellow writers, starting with Dirk Ashton.
I am Dirk Ashton, and I wrote the Paternus trilogy. You can blame me or, you know, whatever.
Or applaud him. Michael R. Fletcher.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Michael R. Fletcher, author of the Obsidian Path trilogy, which is now complete. So go buy it, please.
And
someone just recently told me, Paternus was better than American Gods.
Oh, really?
I heard the same thing. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Really? All right. That's Thank crazy, you. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently you're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people
think so.
Wait,
we have good writers on this?
That was my reaction.
Look at my reviews. Some people don't think so. But enough people do that I'm okay.
Yeah. And lastly, Rob J. Hayes.
Hello, I'm Rob J. Hayes. I am the author of the Mortal Techniques standalone series, the third book of which, Spirits of Vengeance, is this year's Spiffbo.
You! In the cover contest currently, I'm not sure how current that will be when the episode comes out, but I saw that being nominated there, so nicely done.
That if you stick Felix and Sean together on a cover, you're bound to get into the cover contest.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Mike, you didn't enter anything, did you, this year?
No, I'm a judge over at a Fantasy Book Critic this year.
Oh, are you? Oh,
nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
With me here?
About that.
Oh, awesome.
Yep.
That's very cool.
I already read my first book, and now I'm halfway through my second.
Damn.
How many did you get? 5? 4 or 5?
I got 6 books, actually.
Oh, okay.
6 books. A couple, I can already tell I'm not going to be able to finish because
they're
kind of rough. But first book was not bad. Like I finished it, so that's kind of, it was pretty decent. Reading Patrick Leclerc's book right now, and it's pretty fucking good.
Nice.
Cool.
What's the name of the book?
Brain fart.
Let me go.
Brain fart.
Oh, shit. Sorry, Patrick.
That's the name of our personality swapping book. Brain fart.
Brain fart.
How do I spell his name? Patrick Leclerc.
Fuck. Patrick Leclerc.
Leclerc. Oh, like one word.
It's a very fancy author name.
Leclerc. Okay. Is it? Okay, I'm seeing a bunch of books come up on here. He looks like he's got a lot.
Wonder if I can find it quickly.
Well, this episode's gone off the rails already.
I'll start with the episode and then you can get the name so we don't have dead air on you. But
you keep talking.
Cool. So today's episode, we are going to answer a bunch of listener questions. As always, if you have a question that you would like us to answer on the show,
You can go to our website, wizardswarriorswords.com, and there is a contact form on there where you can send a question through, either just by typing with your fingers or through audio message. And audio message is cool because then we have the option of playing it out on the podcast. So, first listener question.
Oh, and
yep, Mike?
Super quick.
Yes.
The book is The Beckoning Void.
Sick title. I like that. Awesome. Cool. So first question comes from Justin, who asks, what do I do if I feel like I have great ideas and terrible execution?
Become a writer.
Yeah, exactly. just
practice.
Just write.
Practice. Yeah,
you gotta sit
keep
down.
Keep practicing. Practice some more.
It's the standard answer. Terrible execution. I'm assuming he's saying he thinks he's a terrible writer. Yeah, just keep writing then. Just sit down and plot some
little
things
known
out
fact,
and just write.
The ideas is the easy part.
Yep.
Yeah.
All that I get people coming to me and going, yeah. Dude, I have this amazing story idea. If you write it, we'll split the profits 50-50. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I have more ideas than I have time to write. Like, I don't need your ideas. Go write your own fucking book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one that perplexes the hell out of me is when people say, well, where do you get your ideas? You know, I want to be a writer and, you know, I got my undergrad or master's degree in creative writing, but you know, I'm trying to figure out what to write. And I'm like, what?
Yep.
I'm like, what? I just don't get it.
Should be the easy.
It is. It's,
sure. Yeah. I mean,
that question, like, where'd you get your ideas? You're like, my imagination.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever answer is that?
Shit up.
I get my ideas from these magic pixies that come to my garden every week and they just drop off some fresh story ideas for me. So
I snort.
I always knew Jed was a hack. He's farming pixies.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. I can't give you their contact details because then they'll be giving you my ideas instead. So,
well, yeah, for Justin, I would say, Justin, you just got to write. Just,
agreed.
Just write. Work on your execution. Read books. Pay real close attention to books that you like. Look at their sentence structure. See how they do stuff and just, you know, emulate for a while as practice exercises.
It's the best way to find your voice, basically, is to, you know, essentially emulate the writers that you want to be like. And eventually, you'll probably sit there and go, oh, God, this just, it's trash. It just sounds like I'm trying to copy. And it will for a while. But eventually,
I want
to
do it like this. And then your own voice comes out.
Exactly. That's why when I released my first trilogy, everybody just said I was an Abercrombie clone. Because I hadn't actually found my own voice yet.
You know, one thing that I find myself doing a lot when I'm reading is like, I will read something and I would have written it like this. I would have worded it like this. And then I think through that in my head. And then I read drafts of my own books and I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't have written it like that. I hopefully would have written it like this. And then it's, oh, no shit. There's a deadline. I got too much shit to do. I can't mess with that prose anymore. And then I end up with a book.
Never reread your own book. That way like madness.
Yeah. 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 It's like, why did I write that like that? Of course, nobody else noticed, but I sure do.
Last thing before we move on to the next question, I would also say a big fear you may have, Justin, is I've got these good ideas. I know that when I write them, they're going to come out bad because I've said I have bad execution. And I'm scared of, like, you know, using up my best ideas or ruining my best ideas. That's just part of the process. Like, you're going to get better ideas as you write these things. But the only way you're going to get to that place of having better ideas and better execution is by being willing to write these good ideas now while you have bad execution.
Badly. Yeah, correct. Write them badly. Just write them. Write them, even if you hate your writing, just write them. Write them badly. Yeah. Just get them out because your writing will get better.
Also, don't shy away from fan fiction. A lot of authors cut their teeth on fan fiction, to be honest.
Yep. Yep.
Cool. Okay, next question comes from Axel, who asks, hi, guys. I got this problem where I can't seem to fill the space between point A and B. I often get ideas that I think are cool for a chapter, and then they end up scattered in different points of time. And then when I have to get my protagonist from the first cool thing to the next, I sort of run out of steam. Does this problem make sense to you? If so, how have you dealt with this problem before? Cheers.
I would say, please read that again.
So I will paraphrase what I think Axel is saying here. I think he's saying that he has like, let's say he has two scenes in his mind. The first scene is the character doing this particular cool thing in location A. Then he has the character having to do another cool thing in this other location, which is in a different place, maybe in a different time. And he's unsure about the best way to kind of link those two scenes up.
That's a problem right off the bat to me, because I would say write those scenes down, right? Because I do this too. I have a ton of ideas for scenes that never end up in the book, or because they just don't fit within the storyline and with the geography and the location and the movement. And then I sometimes have to make up scenes to fill them. So I would say write them down and then write the book. I mean, this sounds like a good example of someone who might need to do some plotting. Write an outline. And you'll see where the problems are with linking scenes together. It's like, oh, here's a perfect place to put that scene. Or it's like, nope, this scene just doesn't fit. So,
yeah, I see that as there's a hole there between character motivation and plot.
Mm-hmm.
And what sounds like this person is plotting, but they don't understand their character motivation. See, when you know what your character wants, that your character's drive, what's motivating them, is what moves them from scene to scene. So if you don't understand their motivation, they have no drive. They're not moving to the next scene. If you've got scene and a cool scene and a cool scene and nothing to move the character between them, then what you're lacking is motivation. Your character doesn't have a reason to go to the next scene. And you've sort of written the book in reverse, or I hate to say it wrong. Right. What you need to do is go back to the beginning and go like, what does my character want? And from that beginning, that's where you figure out
how they're going to go about getting it. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't figure out all the cool things that happen first and then try and shoehorn a character into your sort of plot outline. That's boring.
You absolutely just quickly on that, I would say, yeah, generally you don't want to shoehorn a character into the, you know, designated scenes you've put out. I do think there is something to be said of like, oh, okay, this is the kind of thing I'm interested in writing. What sort of character would be interesting and would want to get into these situations? Like if you have this...
And then develop a character.
Yeah, and then develop it from there. But the point being is like, whether you start from the character perspective or the plot perspective, really they are the same thing, and you can't neglect, you know, one aspect of that.
I have to constantly go back and forth. Paterna started with a grander idea of all these kinds of things that I wanted to do, and I had some ideas for scenes. And I did then have to go, okay, well, what kinds of characters can fulfill this?
Yes.
And then I worked on developing those, but then I have to constantly go back and forth, right? And then, so it's like ideas for plot characters, and then it comes to the point where they're exactly the same thing. Mm. The characters and plot, like Mike says, are the same thing.
Yeah,
but sometimes it can take me a while to get to that point to where they're meshing really well. They're looking at me saying, I wouldn't do this, right? Or why in the hell are we going here? We should be going over there. And I'm like, all right, you're correct. And then I'll fix the outline.
Rob, you were going to say something?
Yeah, the other way to look at that question is whether it's meaning it in a more literal sense, which is, you know, how does my character literally get from this scene to this scene? And I think the thing to take into account is that you don't need to detail every second, every moment of this character's life. You can skip things, basically.
Right.
So, you know, one scene ends, mm-hmm. you can just start the next scene with the character essentially doing something else, moving on to a different, you know, space into that next scene. Okay, the change needs to make sense. You need to be able to see how they're moving from there to there, but you don't need to detail every moment within that sort of like transition, basically.
You basically say he took a cab.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you're there.
And that's how he traveled between teams. Like one.
I actually just went through this kind of thing, working out some outline stuff. I had my main character and his Kraken are getting ready to. They've been hired and they taken this to this place where they're going to stay. And the next morning, I had him waking up, having breakfast on the dock, getting taken to meet who he's going to work for, and then getting assigned to this thing. And I'm like, I don't need to do that. I'm just going to go right to him, having already been working for a week or two in the middle of one of these jobs that these guys have to do. And then the whistle blows and he goes and signs out. We meet the guy he works for. He has a little banter with the guys that he works with. And then he sneaks off to do his personal training, right? The training stuff, so he can get his greater power and become more than what he is. So yeah, I fall into those stupid traps of the alarm goes off, wakes up in the morning, brushes their teeth. And I don't. I can just skip right in, get it moving, keep it moving. I don't have, like Rob said, I don't have to go step by step.
Yes. Yeah, Dirk, I was going to say basically the same thing before, because I had that same experience where I was like, okay, I've got my character, they're kind of hiking through this island and then they need to get onto the boat. Okay, so I need to describe like they're meeting the, you know, people on the boat. And I realized, I'm not interested in writing that. I'm just going to skip and go straight to being on the boat. It's so much more efficient. So,
well, if there is a scene that I really don't look forward to writing and it comes to writing it and I really don't want to write it, I have found that if I just cut it completely and refer to it a little bit later, it's better.
Yes, 100%.
If you don't want to write something, just cut it out.
110%. Yeah. I'm like going through edits at the moment and like that is basically where I'm at. I'm like, why did I force myself to write this thing? I'm just going to cut it and then, you know, just describe it instead. I think a really good kind of easy sort of saying for this is like, get in late, leave early. So it's a big thing they talk about in film editing a lot is like, start the scene the absolute latest moment that you possibly can, because that's probably the most interesting moment to start the scene, and then get out of the scene before it overstays its welcome. So don't, you know, give all this setup stuff. And it's okay, like, I find myself when I'm writing first drafts, I do this a lot. I'd write a lot to get in the scene, you know, like, a character preparing for this moment, like all the lead up to it. And then when I'm editing it, I realize I've got to cut that whole thing. Like there's no point that being there. I needed it to understand where the character was coming from. And it adds a layer of understanding for me as the writer, but readers don't need this. And the story will be better if you can subtract it.
You realize that this only happens to noobs like you and me and, you know, people that are asking these questions because, you know, Mike and Rob don't have these problems.
They've never faced this problem.
Nope. Never. No.
I mean, Mike's at the point now where he doesn't even write the book. He just tells people about it. And, you know, this where you cut out all the annoying transitions.
You just get high on really Fletcher dust and the book appears.
I got to get me some of this Fletcher dust, man. All right, I think we'll move on to one other listener question, and then we might wrap it up. So,
we need more of these voice questions that we get occasionally. They were fun.
We do need more voice questions.
Send us your questions in voice format via the website www.wizardswarriorsandwords.com.
Can you play those so we can hear them, Rob? If they do that,
yeah, I can't.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I was like, oh, great. Rob's taking over all the technical side of the podcast. Thanks, man. Here's an interesting question. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name right, so I'm sorry if I butcher this. Shanae asks, do you guys have any thoughts on allegory and how to incorporate it into the plot?
No.
Mike, I know you most definitely probably have some thoughts on this with the insects.
Singles, go for it, Mike.
Up to you if you want to discuss.
Okay, so I mean, yeah, I'd phrase it differently as theme rather than allegory. For sure, there is a layer. For me, there's the story on the surface, and there's kind of what I'm saying underneath it, And if it's super obvious what I'm saying, then to me, I've kind of done a shitty job at it. What I want is the reader to enjoy the story and kind of be largely unaware of what's happening of the second story underneath, mm-hmm. but to finish the book and be like, oh, fuck. There's like, oh, there's something going on. This isn't a story about insects. Hive insects. It's a look at how people are social monkeys and incapable of getting past that. And all of our decisions, all this shit we're dealing with on a daily basis is because we're stupid fucking monkeys. How to do that, I don't know. For me, it's kind of just happens in the background, but it starts, before I write a book, I have themes in mind. And I'm not trying to write to the theme, or I'm not trying to write the theme, but that sort of background theme impacts where the story is going to go, mm-hmm. and maybe how I tell it a little bit. But I honestly don't spend a ton of time thinking about it. Yeah. I just, once I have the idea in there, I start writing.
Right. The way I think about allegory and theme is, I'm the same way, Mike. I'm much more interested in theme. Is that all allegories, of course, have a theme, but not all books with a strong theme or themes are an allegory. Like, we could easily say, Jed, we were talking earlier about Joe Abercrombie's latest trilogy. You could easily say that those books are an allegory for, you know, modern times of, the political machinations of modern times with a rebellion of the lower classes against the upper classes. And it's an allegory. This story stands in for this, right? And then the theme is, you know, basically any number of things that come out. Turns out that both sides are, of course, it's Abercrombie, are equally reprehensible. You wonder what the message is really supposed to be, but if there is one at all. So, yeah, I go more with theme. I think setting out to write an allegory is dangerous, in that you're obviously going to be, they're going to see you as an author stepping onto a soapbox right off the bat. A perfect example of an allegory is like Animal Farm, right?
I was just going to mention that. Yep.
Right. I mean, that's one that's brought up all the time. It's an allegory of the lower classes rising up, the Soviet Revolution is basically the way it works out. And then it's supposed to be set up that way. But of course, they turn into capitalist pigs, right? And become just as bad, if not worse, than what they overthrew. So it's an allegory for that, basically. And but that is a very obvious political statement, allegory about something, and it's brilliantly written, but the soapbox is there, no apologies, that's cool. It's a little more dangerous and now to do that in modern times, to show that, look at this book, it's political and it's right and it's good, and that can attract a certain crowd, but it's going to turn off another huge crowd. So I wouldn't say don't do it. Just be aware that that's a possibility if you're trying to do a true political allegory. It doesn't have to be a political allegory, but most of them are.
Rob, do you have any other thoughts?
Not really. I much like, you know, Fletcher and Dirk, I prefer to write around themes, and, you know, issues like that. But I find that if you have an idea of what it's going to be when you're going in, that's great. You can sort of do it more subtly and you're not trying to beat people around the head with it, basically. But then at the same time, it's perfectly all right to go into a book without an idea of what that's going to be and figure it out as you go along, or even write a book that has no deeper, you know, sort of like themes going around
just entertaining.
It and a bit more popcorn fantasy, popcorn entertainment, mm-hmm. basically. So I wouldn't worry too much about it any which way.
I think one thing that is useful to consider, particularly where I think Abercrombie excels at this, is like there's a certain like scrambling to the themes and everything that comes behind it. Like you can look at Abercrombie's books and you can pull out a lot of different themes, allegories, like call them whatever you want. Like you can look at the kind of political aspect. You can look at the more like, oh, everyone's got this darkness within their... within themselves internally. You can also look at it as just like, this is, you know, everyone is susceptible to violence and everyone is trying to get power in their own ways. Like there are a lot of different ways you can look at it. And then you can also look at it without any of that and just go, this is really fun to read about Logan Ninefingers going mad and tearing people's heads off and that sort of thing. So something that is kind of interesting, I think, is when you can create a story that is almost like this, you know, Rorschach ink block test where there is this sense of like so much deep meaning and profoundness there, but like you also don't exactly know what it is. And Rob, maybe you can speak to this because I haven't played Elden Ring.
So basically watch every single Rick and Morty episode.
Yeah. Where you're like, it's really, yeah, you're like, this is, feels really meaningful. It also feels like totally pointless at the same time. And it's really fun. So yeah, it's just all these things. But this is one common review I was hearing of Elden Ring and I haven't played it, so I don't know. And Rob, I'd like to get your thoughts on it. I think it was Abercrombie himself who was saying Elden Ring somehow manages to feel so profound and like so meaningful and so much like it's about this thing without like really being about anything or without having any dialogue or any obviousness. And it's like,
it just feels that way.
Yeah. It's almost like this magic trick where you're thinking there's all this depth to it. And it's in some senses not, it's just like a lot of cool ideas were thrown into it and it allows for these emergent properties to come out of it. Do you agree with that, Rob, or did you have a different experience?
I'd say Elden Ring, much like all Dark Souls games, which is, you know, basically the parent idea behind that game, is 90% setting. Here's this dark, gothic, cool setting and some really sort of mysterious hints of lore dropped here and there and allow the gamers basically to, you know, take those little bits and invent more in their own head so that each person comes up with, you know, their own sort of like personalities for the characters that don't really have any. You know, I've seen so much about like there's one of the biggest bosses is like she's you know so little about her. She's a demigod. She's the queen of rot, and she has one line of dialogue, which is, "My name is Millennia, Blade of Mickle, I have never known defeat." That's it. That's the entire character. Go nuts.
And people just project all these things onto her.
Exactly. So, but then I don't know if you could do that in any other medium other than computer games, because the whole thing about computer games is people projecting themselves onto the computer game anyway. So, I don't
know. Fair point. Yeah, okay. Well, I hope we answered your question there. yeah, I think, I don't think there's, to summarize, I don't think there's anything wrong with writing like allegory in the sense of allegory being an overt political message. I do think you probably will get a lot of pushback from it. Sounds like we're more interested in writing, kind of exploring themes, which are, I guess, these deeper ideas about, I don't know, something that we think of the world that is fascinating to explore from different angles within a book. So that is a good spot to wrap up today's episode. Thank you for sending in those listener questions. If you have questions for us, feel free to go to our website, wizardswarriorswords.com, and you can send it through that contact form there. We'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Traw.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.